People prepared for the worst, but they didn't always comprehend how awful the worst could be. The Camp Fire in November 2018 was the deadliest wildfire in America in a century and the deadliest ever recorded in California history. It burned the town of Paradise, home to 27,000, to the ground, and it was a harbinger of fires to come. In the new book, Fire in Paradise, an American Tragedy, reporters Alistair Gee and Danny Anguiano of The Guardian tell the story of the destruction wrought by the campfire, creating an account of how the fire happened and why fires like it will happen again. The name of the book is Fire in Paradise. It's published by Norton, and we welcome Alistair Gee and Danny Anguiano to the roundtable this morning. Thank you both for being with us. A great pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
Very nice to have you. Did I get your names right?
Yeah, that was perfect.
Okay, there you go. What brought you, Alistair, to this subject initially of wanting to, in doing the reporting and then ultimately wanting to tell the story in a book form?
Well, I had lived in California for 10 years, and wildfires are just a fact of life in California in the same way that rain and monsoons or hurricanes are a fact of life in other parts of the world. Wildfires come regularly to California. But this fire was unlike any other fire that we had seen before. On the morning of the fire, which was pretty much exactly 18 months ago, we woke up and my colleague Danny starts receiving texts and phone calls from her relatives who lived up in the Paradise area, which is in Northern California, in a beautiful mountainous area, part of the Sierra Nevada mountain range. And immediately, Danny asked to be dispatched up to that area to cover the story for The Guardian. She did. I edited some of Danny's early stories, and then we started collaborating. And it quickly became clear to us that this fire was just off the charts. And, you know, ultimately, it would prove to be the deadliest wildfire in the U.S. in 100 years.
So give us a sense, Danny, of at that point when you realized that this wasn't, because you say in the book that it can be difficult to grasp that in California fire is as natural and necessary as the rain or wind. So at what point did you realize, okay, this is something different?
You know, actually pretty early on. So I knew that this area, this part of California in particular, was especially vulnerable to wildfires. In fact, when I moved to the area, it was in 2008, it was experiencing some of the worst wildfires it had. But when I started seeing reports that a fire was moving so fast that people couldn't escape, that people were stuck in town, you know, at the Save Mart and at the police station, and they couldn't even leave because the fire was passing through, I thought to myself, this is going to be really bad. And that's ultimately, you know, it led me to tell my coworkers at The Guardian that I need to go cover this. This is going to be especially deadly. And of course, it went beyond even what I had imagined, you know, with 85 people dead at the end of this.
I mean, that's a really great point. And Alistair, I'm interested in what you learn. There is the day-to-day reporting, of course, but looking at this situation with a little bit of hindsight now, where does it rank, and what do we ultimately know about the overall devastation of the campfire?
So it's in terms of ranking, I mean, it's, you know, it has the unfortunate honor of being at the top of the ranking. It's the deadliest ever wildfire in California that we know of. And I think what we are realizing now is that with the climate crisis, you know, California has had its four warmest years on record were in the 2010s, and it saw some incredible fires. I mean, just a couple months before the fire in Paradise, there was, this sounds crazy, but there was a fire tornado in a nearby town. It was 1,000 feet wide. It tore through various neighborhoods. And, you know, also in that general time period, California saw its largest by area ever fire on record. And so I think what we're seeing now is we're in an era of what scientists call mega fires, size of just unbelievable proportion. And the reason that they are becoming more likely, I mean, there are lots of reasons, but largely the climate crisis is one. Another factor is that the way that we've managed forests in the Western U.S. has led to various issues. You know, we're so you know, in the past century, we've been so good at putting out forest fires. We developed this whole paramilitary, very heroic firefighting force that actually the forests are now more dense and tangled than they should be. You know, previously fires would have burned off some of that brush. So now you've got this, like, just mix of different factors. And the final factor you throw into all of it is that people want to live in these places. They're so beautiful. They're just, you know, they're gorgeous, and they're often more affordable than the coastal cities like Los Angeles or San Francisco. And so, you know, you've just got all the ingredients for a disaster.
Danny, give us a sense of paradise, of a little bit about the history of this place.
Sure. So, you know, paradise, as of November 2018 and before, it was a town of about 26 to 27,000 people in the Sierra Nevada foothills, the beautiful town in the trees. And, you know, originally the area was largely settled by the non-Indigenous around the gold rush. You know, people were drawn to California and to that area for that. And it kind of developed out of that. They had their own history there with the Indigenous people who were, you know, eventually sort of cast out from the area. And then it developed, I would say, like any other small suburban town in America. You know, there was a lot of gatherings around high school football games and that sort of thing. But also, I think what made it unique was this real appreciation for the natural beauty and wanting to preserve that. And that was such a big part of people's lives. If you ask people in that area what their favorite things to do, it would be, you know, to hike, to go down to the river, to go up to the high lakes, you know, things that are just all about nature.
Give us an idea, Alistair, about the fire history of this area prior to this huge fire.
There had been a number of fires in that very area. I mean, people, just in 2008, there was a particularly severe fire that came right to the edge of town. And what's interesting, if you read news reports from that time, is people in the local newspaper were saying, you know, we dodged a bullet this time. What if the fire actually got into town? What if, you know, it blocked roads? What if people couldn't escape? And so, you know, the town was very conscious that they were at risk, and they developed a lot of systems that they thought would help them to dodge the risk. They had an evacuation plan. They had a whole robocall system set up to warn you if the fire was coming. They had fire rehearsals, fire evacuation rehearsals. So, you know, these people, although they lived in a dangerous area, they were very conscious of the risk, and there was a lot of preparation for it. I just think that, you know, the fire that came on November 8th, when it approached town, you know, on the way from where it sparked, it was moving at speeds, as Danny said, that people thought fire couldn't move out of it. It was eating as much as 400 football fields worth of vegetation a minute, just chewing through the countryside, steaming towards paradise. So, you know, the fire, the town was prepared. It had a history of fire, but it just didn't expect that severity of fire.
A large part of this story is Pacific Gas and Electric, otherwise known as PG&E. Danny, tell us about the rise of PG&E in this region and the 125,000 miles of power lines that really, for want of a better term, fuel this story in some way.
You know, PG&E's story is very much a California story. Its development matches the development in these rural places. And it is really, you know, it's one of a few power providers in California, but I think it's the one that comes to mind because it provides power to so many Californians. And PG&E has so many miles of power lines to maintain. And gradually over the years, what we've seen is that these power lines have been linked to these fires. And it's not just the power lines. You know, PG&E has sort of a troubled history. You look at things like, you know, the water pollution in Hinckley that was the subject of the movie Aaron Brockovich. And then you look at a gas pipeline explosion in San Bruno in 2010 that killed, I believe, about 13 people. PG&E in recent years has just become such a troubled company. And when this fire started, you know, there was talk of that perhaps it was PG&E because they reported an outage on one of their lines. And it turned out that that is what happened, that there was a very old piece of equipment on a PG&E power line that needed to be replaced, you know, decades ago and wasn't. And that's ultimately what started that fire that destroyed Paradise.
What do we know now as far as the status of the company and what they're doing in the wake of these fires and the devastation that we saw in November of 2018?
Sure. Well, you know, since then, PG&E has just really been in the public eye. You know, people are demanding answers. They're saying, you killed 85 people. What are you going to do to change? And what we've seen from that is, you know, PG&E declared bankruptcy. They are working to come out of that and meet, you know, certain state requirements. They promise that they're going to be a different company, that this won't happen again. They're supposed to come out of bankruptcy later this year. They've, you know, started to settle with victims. But what they've also said is that they don't believe they can stop fires from starting. They say with, you know, this new reality we're facing in the climate crisis that there will be fires. It's unavoidable, they say, with the thousands of miles of power lines they have and the aging infrastructure that badly needs replaced, but that will take time to replace.
When we're talking about the story, Alistair, of course, a great part of the book is this amazing account of the evacuation. And I'm hoping you can share a little bit about what that evacuation was like and how precise it was and really how incredible it was.
Yeah, exactly. Well, to set the scene, I mean, disaster experts say that there is no city in the U.S. that is prepared to evacuate all of its residents at exactly the same time and do it in a way that gets everyone out safely and quickly. It's just impossible. We don't build roads wide enough for it. There just isn't the infrastructure. And so Paradise is in this situation where all of a sudden the entire town of 30,000 people had to evacuate on roads that simply weren't built for it. And so what you had at the same time as this fire was barreling into town, torching buildings and trees and cars, you had incredible gridlock on the roads of people just inching forward with, you know, the whole world seemingly on fire on all sides of the road in the sky above them. And, you know, not only did this kill people, but you had firefighters, you know, eventually telling people to get out of their cars, corralling them into intersections, and, you know, defending them with fire hoses as the fire raged all around. You had people, you know, you had cops breaking into convenience stores or gas stations and shepherding people inside to try and protect them. And, you know, one of the awful tragedies that we found is that because the fire moved so quickly and took so many people unawares, including disabled people, elderly people, people knew that their relatives or friends were trapped, but because of the traffic, they just could not get to them. And so there were just devastating stories of people, you know, people on the phone to their mother or to their friend saying, please get out, please get out. And the person saying, well, I can't, you know, everything's on fire. The traffic's not moving. I can't move. What am I going to do? And so, you know, a lot of the really terrible stories were because people were simply trapped.
Let me direct this question to both of you, and we'll start with you, Alistair, which is, given that Paradise will never again be what it was, what lessons do you think we have learned in this rather short period of time, and the lessons that we've learned and the lessons that we haven't learned?
I think what we've learned is that this can happen again, and I think that so many of the people that I spoke to, from firefighters to officials to just ordinary residents of the town, all of a sudden their idea of what is possible is suddenly expanded. And so, you know, I spoke to a firefighter who had lived in a town similar to Paradise, about 100 miles away. And when I met him after his incredibly heroic rescue of so many people in Paradise, he told me, I think this can happen in my town. I think it will happen in my town. And so I think, you know, one of the best things, you know, if you can say that, that's come out of this fire is that it's just awakened people to the fact that so many people in the Western U.S. now are vulnerable to these new kinds of very deadly wildfires. And so, you know, there's a lot more focus now on, we can't prevent this. It's going to come through. How do we survive this? What do we need? Do we need, for instance, to have shelter-in-place areas where, instead of trying to get everyone out of town at once, we've created a safe area that's maybe just a sea of asphalt, which is not flammable, where people can gather if a fire comes through. So it's really, I think, shifting perceptions around what was previously thought to be impossible.
And Danny, what would you like to add to that?
I mean, I'll echo some of that. I think that one of the sort of more positive things is that there's a real awareness that this can happen again. You know, this came after a very deadly fire season in 2017 in which 44 people died in the North Bay area. And I think people kind of hoped it was maybe a fluke or a one-off. And what we've seen is that, no, this can happen again. And, you know, by all indicators, it probably will. My one worry is that people look at what happened in Paradise and say, okay, well, don't build there. And it's just not a solution. I think it kind of ignores the fact that people were drawn to Paradise because it was affordable. The cost of living in California is very high, and it seems to get more expensive every year. So when we say things like, well, don't build there, we ignore the people who were there because it's what they could afford.
Right. Well, the book is just fascinating. It's Fire in Paradise, an American Tragedy. Alistair G. and Danny Anguiano, I thank you both for being with us this morning and for the amazing reporting. I so appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Be well. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Fire in Paradise, an American Tragedy. The book is published by Norton. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.